Osaka. The delegation from the department has seen almost everyone has a name tag and has applied to the ministry also to obtain a name tag. It looks very professional and encouraging. I'd also like to welcome the members and also importantly the various stakeholders who come and see what we are doing. So everyone is welcome. I must just say that around 10 o'clock I've got an urgent matter to attend to. So I've spoken to Mrs. Maune to not stand in for me but to sit in for me whilst I attend to this matter. But welcome once again to the department. To, I'm told the Deputy Director General is leading this delegation. So we are in your able hands, and for you to kindly introduce your delegation and then commence with the presentation. We are all aware that as members of parliament, as the department, and as people who actually man the various offices of Home Affairs, we've got this challenge to turn the department around. It's common knowledge that the reputation, the image of the department has not been what it should be. So we are all working together from the side of Parliament, from the side of the department, stakeholders, to make this our department, the Department of Home Affairs, the best department that they can be. So we have this joint responsibility to do the best by our people without fear or favor. Thank you. Baron Keith.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Good morning. Yes, indeed, we have a great pleasure to be in the midst and being offered an opportunity to address our portfolio committee for the Department of Home Affairs. My name is Bosim Kize, the DDG for Civic Services. I have on my left hand side Mr. McKay, who is the Deputy Director General for Immigration Services. On my extreme left, I have Mr. Sekran Naido, who is also the acting chief financial officer for the department. I have Diane Clocker, director in the office of the director general. I have Tembisi Mamane, who is responsible for integrated governance. Behind me directly, I have Ms. Jambane Mlesi-Spanyeto, who is the acting DG for human resources. I have our strategist, Mr. Doctor, before I make a mistake, is not a mistake, he might punish me. He is a doctor and Callison. The Director General had offered and forwarded his apology for not being able to be here. Chairperson and honorable members, we are indeed in full agreement with the statement of the Chairperson that the reputation and the image of the department has faced a lot of battering, and our commitment as a shared responsibility is to ensure that this department is turned around and transformed completely. And therefore, our presentation and our understanding is about the transformation of the Department of Home Affairs, the process that has started really in earnest and is already on track. So our presentation I will outline it as follows. We would like to provide the Portfolio Committee of Foreign Affairs with an overview of the transformation of the department. We will present the historical perspective quite briefly. We will then move to the background for transformation program, and then state the case for transformation or why transformation was required, and then the key thrust or the drivers and the focus points for transformation. We will then present our problem statement as well as the strategic responses that were identified as a response to the challenges emanating from the problem statement. We will then give just briefly our overall strategic framework and what are the objectives for the department. We will then state what do we think the department should look like and we believe is attainable in the next 5 years and beyond. And we call that an ideal state. It in fact refers to our greater vision beyond the 5-year horizon. We will then indicate, just in a nutshell, the progress and challenges that we're still facing, but also what are the achievements already that have been realized and have laid the foundation for us to say we are on track in transforming the department. And we will then give the strategic and operational responses. If the House allows Chairperson, we would also request an opportunity. We had in fact provided about 2 video clips. However, looking at the fact that both of them take almost combined about 24 minutes, that at least we allow to present at least just one of the video clips, which would be maybe with a shorter time of about 12 minutes, unless the House allows and time permits. Because we've got one that is dealing with both the IT transformation process and what was done, and the other one is dealing with the turnaround into the refugee center. So, in terms of time permitting, we would have loved to present both of them, but we will get guidance in terms of that from the chairperson. If we were then to proceed, and the historical perspective that we are presenting is quite clearly that historically the Department of Home Affairs, as we have indicated, emanating from the history pre-1994, was being used as a segregating instrument that enforced the apartheid rule as well as the colonial rule, in that it was in fact meant really just to segregate against and effectively implement the policies then that would undermine the mass population of the country, which was then also utilized mainly in terms of movement control for purposes of where you can work and where you can stay, who you can get married to. It was all used to enforce those labor and laws as well as just in terms of caution and segregation. Within the apartheid dispensation, Home Affairs then had a colonial perspective and as a state security focus in terms of really arresting those that are seen to be transgressing the laws of being moving and settling or working illegally in certain parts of the country. And then through Home Affairs will be identified and be regarded as being illegally in those areas and then be removed or arrested. So it was meant really to maintain that exclusive power based on race. In particular, but also then undermining human rights and so as an instrument of maximum control. So the perspective then of the department or transformation has been both in terms of it being now not a stopper, not a controller, and neither being just seen as really a keep-out instrument for the state, but more as a custodian and a protector as well as a verifier of identity, but also determination of the status of citizens. This is based on the fact that the department post-apartheid and post-1994 era, it became quite clear that the department has to be a facilitator and as well as a department that ensures that people exercise their human rights as captured in particular in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. So, Citizenship begins with meaningful understanding of identity. Our key thrust then is about really identity of South African citizens and making sure that they take pride in that. But also that then effectively will ensure that there is effective control, regulation, and facilitation of immigration and the flow of people through port of entry in the interest of both of national security, but also then, as we understand, the department plays a critical role in the development priorities of the country. This is particularly linked to the threat that we need to facilitate the acquisition of skills through immigration. Background to transformation, in 2006, the then Minister of Home Affairs initiated a number of key actions that resulted in the launch of the transformation process for the department. That was based in particular, I think, what triggered the minister then to make this decision. One of the key things was a continuous disclaimer that the department faced all the time when the Auditor General assessed the state of the department regarding the management of finances. There was a series of disclaimers in consecutive years indicated a deeper sense of need for transforming the department. So in July 2006, then the minister appointed the support intervention task team to investigate the problems of Home Affairs. In March 2007, this task team had provided a report and then urging that action must be taken and taken now to fix the department and the malaise that the department was going through. Subsequent to that, then there was a clear need at that time, because then the Director General was the post was vacant. There was a need then to ensure that the Director General was appointed, who will then be the champion for this transformation and make sure that all the recommendations of the task team are implemented. Consequently, then in June, a consultancy called Fevertree was appointed to kick off the process of turnaround projects within the department. Why was this necessary? It was quite clear that the department is building a case that positions Home Affairs and shows how it must play a critical role in the state and civil society. I think this, based on our background that was indicated, quite clearly is that the role of Home Affairs must be positioned in a manner that it is a strategic department that enables and will be able to outline that as we go through the document. But really the repositioning here, we're talking about the fact that the department is not necessarily responsible for producing documents. It is more about managing identity and ensuring that the status of citizens is really recorded accordingly, and it will indicate then how we go about doing that. But we want to shift the thinking that Home Affairs is just about issuance of an ID, issuance of a permit, rather than really managing that effectively in a humane manner, and eventually then the byproduct is and will be those documents. So as a custodian and a protector and verifier of the identity and status of citizens, as well as a regulator and manager of migration, the department must help provide equal access to services and help drive a sense of valued identity, citizenship, as well as democratic nation building. We are aware that if citizens do not have an ID book, are unable to deepen democracy, because then they are unable to vote. We are aware that if people do not value their identity, it becomes quite easy to then not create social cohesion that the Department of Government is trying to realize. So as part then of symbols of nationhood, it becomes necessary that people are served by this department in a manner that they will value their identity and they will see that government, as Home Affairs is just part of the microcosm of that, that then it does value them and it does give them equal access to services. Greatly assist in producing a secure environment for both the state and business to operate in and develop and in general and within an environment that will prevent identity theft and fraud, but also including for the security and of social grants, as an example here. Now the reason why this trust becomes critical for the department in terms of the security aspect it's clear that if someone steals one's identity, and then one is able to do every sort of thing under that identity, whether it's committing fraud, whether it's committing crime, whether it's defrauding a commercial institution, it just becomes a mess for the life of the rightful owner of that identity. So in our mindset and thinking as a department, it becomes critical that we create a sense that my identity, your identity is secure, and it is being made accessible only to me. But that then also the state and the country itself, if identity management is reckless and is undermined and is done in a manner that doesn't show a sense of state security, then the whole country is at risk, because people who are non-citizens who acquire this illegally can only do that with ill intentions, and therefore it becomes necessary that we do that in a secure environment, but also then provide a stable and secure platform for regulation of migration, for development within the country. This is really just about ensuring that when we deal with asylum seekers, we regulate that in a proper way. When we deal with refugee affairs, that is done in a sensitive way. And that we are able then to say that we are having a stable sense of how we are managing migration and as well as asylum seeker processes. The issue of integrated systems would also of great assistance here in combating human trafficking and even goods trafficking by people who have intention to use South Africa as a springboard to move to other areas and for serious crimes that they would like to commit through the cross-border syndicate. We also realize that a government need to be enabled to realize its development objectives. And this is really more in line with dealing with issues of importation of skills. If Home Affairs enable and facilitate acquisition of skills, particularly as we've got what we call the large account, for example, now, where that is an example of how we can proactively ensure that the right skills, scarce skills in the country, are being secured by those people who are not necessarily South African but want to come and work in the country. So it became necessary that then we do that in a proactive manner, in a structured manner, and that when there is a determination of that quota and that those quotas are taken up, we encourage the various companies to do that so that they recruit right skills. Provide a secure backbone for commerce and for government systems. Really, this is more about ensuring that e-government, which is a clear indication at this stage that almost every country is moving towards e-government. E-government makes services easily accessible. It makes decentralization much, much more easier for citizens to access services. So if Home Affairs can be able to provide that backbone in terms of its population register, in terms of its system, we believe that that will enable government to realize its dream to take services to people, but also that will make services much more conveniently accessible. This includes issues like driver's licenses. If we were to have a smart card that is able to function and be able to be really up and running, we believe we'll be able to have convenience for the state and for government in general, but also commercially, that people will then only have a card that they can use around. If it's a smart card, it captures details of people, and therefore people are able to need that rather than multiple cards that they might have. Provide reliable information. Home Affairs is the custodian of the National Population Register. So if we are able to make sure that it has integrity, we are able to make sure that it is reliable, then government can be able to do planning. All other departments can really be able to use information from the department for planning, as well also for monitoring, and also for just allocating resources accordingly. And because they need to know how many births can be anticipated, expected in terms of the trend. We can be able to see marriage trends, we can be able to see death trends, as well as movement control in and out of the country. And we need to be able to provide evidence-based planning and impetus, and as well as be able to then ensure that at the end of the day, monitoring and evaluation is conducted based on credible, reliable, and valid information. Potentially, provide the state with a substantial revenue. This is based on the case where we've got what we call the Home Affairs National Identification System, and the component of that is what we call AFIS, the Automated Fingerprint Identification System. Now, this system enables us to electronically verify information about a person who claims that he is who he says he is, or she is who she claims she is. Now, if we use online verification through this particular instrument, then government will be able to really make some minimum charges against this, and therefore then generate more revenue, not just for the department, but generally for the state. Because then if we charge those funds, they go to the coffers of the state, and the state can decide how to use them. We have already moved quite a step closer in working with the financial institutions here, and already during the month of August, we had a phase one of the pilot concluded with the financial institutions, all the banking institutions, and then the results were quite positive on how we can do that. The credit starts along the department. We identified four credit starts, but then fundamentally, these really are aimed at ensuring that at the end of the day we've got very strong leadership, but also that a sense of corporate governance is really adhered to and implemented. So this trust really, at the roof of them, is about the leadership and governance. What we then looked at was that service delivery and processes need to be changed for the better. But also that information and communication technology, the department we are working on very outdated, and some of the technology systems that we've got are unstable, are not integrated, and yet if we want to achieve what we have just indicated about reliable information, about the integrity of the data we provide, then we need to make sure that our technology systems are really reliable. Service culture and human resources. This is really based on what we believe as a country, that the citizens experience government through Home Affairs. It was through their life cycle, from birth to death, is going through Home Affairs. Now, if they can experience a service culture that makes a difference in their lives, that is able to say, I was treated like I'm the only citizen in this country when I went to Home Affairs, we believe then that will assist us in changing the whole sense and perception of our government. Because we are the northern point as a department in which then people experience government. But also that then to do the culture change processes effectively, we need to make sure that we've got the right human resources, the right people with the right skills, the right attitude, but also with clear commitment towards proper work ethic and service culture that we are aspiring. And that is why then we will indicate our service and values that we believe we must adhere to. But also then, as I indicated, the issue of financial management was one of the key things that triggered transformation as a need for us to go through this process of change and rebirth. So financial management was also seen as a key area for transformation. Problem statement, I believe honorable members and chairperson, this has been presented before. I don't have to go through in detail. However, just in a nutshell, when we talk about leadership and management and governance, we're talking here really about critical mass of senior managers and supervisors not being in place, that there is a need to appoint people with the right skills to gaps at leadership level. Weaknesses in management and governance processes, limited operational control and use of information systems, these remain key areas that are problematic and will continue to transform. Service delivery and processes. This is about business processes that we have that are outdated, not streamlined, multiple handovers, open to manipulation and corruption. Processes not people orientated and based on actual needs, poor service and frontline environment, as well as just uneven access to services. This is informed by multiple reasons, really, about access to services, which we'll outline in the next few slides. Information and technology, we are indicating here that the problem really relies on unstable, insecure, and often outdated IT infrastructure, internal capacity too weak to ensure operational efficiency and good governance, duplication and non-integration of systems. Service culture and human resources remain a key area of focus, and because if you have uneven commitment to service and to a consistent set of values, as well as related behaviors, you will always have a challenge. But also, widespread corruption, often linked to syndicates, which is influenced by a number of things and by both people inside and people outside of the department. Serious gaps in capacity, as well as another level of skill, as well as levels of professionalism. Financial management is about control that needs to be strengthened, management of revenue and assets, and which is quite weak. Management of procurement and contracts needed to be strengthened and to provide adequate support to business. The responses then of the department at a strategic level. In response to the areas that were identified, what then did we say we need to do to transform and change the department? Leadership issues. Is that we said then as a response is to strengthen governance and build a management team at all levels that drives new values and takes full control of operations. And who are we working with here? We've got in this slide here, we're indicating partners that we work with, and there are various partners around which we work with and we source their skills and expertise so that we can strengthen governance. Now, governance, I think one of the most important things that we identified here was you need to be able to have accountability in a structure of an organization. And if there is no proper governance, if the people are not there who are managers, if they are not guided by values of corporate governance, it is very easy to make wrong decisions. It is very easy to have a lack of accountability, and because then the delegations of authority are not clear. Meetings are held, but they are purposeless, aimless, and without any effective decision making, you have a problem. So governance really is about streamlining that and have appropriate committees at appropriate levels. But also then to talk about the issues of value and making sure that from end to end, there is full control of operations. Here we are aware that the way issues, for example, about IDs that you will never know when you apply, whether it goes through a dark hole, and when you try to check operations and what is happening. If someone says they've kept the IT application there on the table, you can't hold anyone accountable, and the IT application is sitting there unattended. Because managers and supervisors were just letting the vision around issues of how to manage and control operations themselves. Our response was, for example, have operations management in the department being implemented. Service delivery, the new model, which is people-centered, is that we didn't bring the cube here, but there is a cube that really says that the clients or the citizens are a center of our service delivery, and then it pulls together all other processes that we need to deal with, systems that we need to make sure are in place. And so we had to look at that service delivery model, but saying that the citizens are at the heart of our services. And that model is available. But also then to say the organizational structure must be responsive to the strategy. If the strategy says people first, then the structure must also be able to enable us to do that. Develop a coherent policy and legislative framework. And that is what we are busy with at this stage. And a lot of consultations have taken place with other departments around a comprehensive legislative and policy framework for the department. We then say, let us also transform core processes, but also speed up service delivery while we enhance security of our processes. Who are we working with here? Among other partners, Fevertree, as we have indicated, but also includes here managing various third parties that we also bring on board as and when they are required. Information and communication technology, this is about really building a very sound integrated platform in which eventually we will have paperless environment. Currently we have challenges about even our own records that are still manual. If the portfolio committee can be taken to one of our centers in Roslyn, you will realize what does it mean to go through those papers and be able to then appreciate the situation when we say there is a need to move from an environment where we are dealing with manual records to an environment where our records are electronic, and therefore the speed in terms of accessing them is faster, and we are able to also make sure that we are able to resolve cases quicker. The systems are mostly not integrated, and therefore then we need to make sure our response that we have a platform that provides integrated systems that are also reliable and secure, and they not cannot be easily hacked by people who want to just access our system. We're working with Ijima AFT here, we're working with Mapnet, we're working with Siemens and other various IT and competent companies that we can assist us. Service culture and human resources elements. Our response here in dealing with this lack of service culture, but also with all people that we need to recruit the right people for the with the right attitude towards service excellence. We looked at the steps that can assist us in terms of culture change, as well as to practice what it is. It is important to indicate to our portfolio committee here that Home Affairs is a microcosm of a bigger societal malaise around issues of Ubuntu. Because the Home Affairs officials that we talk about are in fact members of our society. And therefore then the issue of culture and practice of service, I think it's something that goes deeper in terms of values and how we deal with each other just as South Africans. And that is why I believe the minister has come up with a clear understanding that we need to work together with all South Africans in changing a culture that undermines the value of being a human being, which tramples on the dignity of people. So as that microcosm, if we can be able to help change this culture, in fact we are changing the value and the mindset of people on how to deal with other people, not just when you are at work, but generally also in any social interaction sphere. So that is why this emphasis becomes critical. But also that we've got problems about corruption, as well as a need to capacitate the staff. In this area, our response is working also with various institutions. And that's why we've got what we call, for example, change management, which then aims at assisting people in terms of really managing and being responsive to change initiatives. Financial and asset management is a strength in financial control, as we have indicated here, that we had a problem of disclaimer as a department, which clearly pointed to issues about poor financial management and or mismanagement of finances and lack of control. So we had to then work and source assistance from different companies like NSDR and Young, and combined systems who are dealing with asset management and asset register, Aquila, which is a financial institution that assists us in terms of dealing with finances in a public sector. They were assisting us here in relation to this around fleet management strategy being developed with them. So we are looking at those issues around financial management and getting the department out of the rut of the frame. So what is the framework within which we are trying to achieve our goals or our endeavors are based? Our endeavors are really based on the fact that without vision, you have no direction. There will be no compass that takes you to where to your destination. So it becomes necessary for us to say our vision must be in line with our transformation and our change. And that is why our vision clearly states that we would like to contribute effectively to the development of a safe, secure South Africa where all its people are proud of and do value their identity and citizenship. And it becomes very amazing if people raise a flag and it shows that they are proud of their country. If they sing the national anthem, they are proud of their country. But all these things are really an expression of your identity as a person. So if your identity and citizenship is expressed through the flag, through the national anthem commitment, then it's not necessary that home affairs, through how it secures our identity, so that we know that it is protected, it is safe, and we contribute to this pride as a department. So our vision then is really aimed at that we play this significant role about our pride as citizens of this country. How then do we plan to achieve that in terms of our mission? Clearly we are saying that if we can be efficient in determination and safeguarding of the identity, but also of the status of citizens, and in the way in which we regulate migration, we will be able to achieve and inspire our people's sense of pride in their citizenship and identity. So that is how we really plan to achieve our vision. What values then that we would like to entrench, embed, and inspire our colleagues in the department to really live by? These values include people-centered and caring. In other words, here we were saying people to us, as Home Affairs, we're not only serving citizens of South Africa, but we also serve people who are from our visitors who come from other countries, they come to South Africa. So it would sound exclusionary if we only talk of citizens without acknowledging that we also part and parcel of a global village, and there's a lot of people from other countries who live or visit the country. But also that then we must build a sense of patriotism as well as a commitment to fighting corruption among ourselves as a staff of Home Affairs. But also that we do our work in a professional manner, deserving integrity, of great integrity. So that is the value, those are the values we would like to really entrench and live by as officials of the department. Be accountable and be transparent. We believe that the issue of transparency really is critical, particularly because if you render services to clients and citizens who do not know what are their rights, you have an opportunity then to create an environment fertile for corruption and bribery, because people don't know what is the recourse if they are faced with challenges in a particular office. So if we are transparent in how we render service, if we inform our citizens what to expect when they go to offices, we believe then that we will improve both accountability, but also to be able to be held as responsible for our action or inaction. And therefore, it became critical that the way we render service must be most transparent. But also that then people don't only want it to be effective. They also expect their product, when they apply, to come back within a particular time. And that time must be reliable. And that is why then it becomes necessary that in what we do, while being effective, and in terms of an overall way we do our business, we make sure that the element of efficiency and turnaround time is entrenched, so that we don't take for granted when someone applies for a permit, it takes 2 years, apply for an IT, it takes 3 years. And that also our staff and ourselves must always be driven by a sense that there are other ways in which you can do work. So innovation and creativity needs to be entrenched. And because sometimes if you only say the rule says, without looking at the context, you have a staff that only looks at the rule, you find that then there are various dimensions you must deal with, and you must make decisions on the spot. You must be creative in how you do and perform your function. You end up with a staff that just operates like robots. That is not a healthy environment. So the staff need to be empowered, managers and supervisors need to be empowered to be innovative in how they also render service. The framework is then summed up in terms of our strategic goals for 2009-10 to 2013-14 financial year. These are the goals that are expressed in terms of our framework. To provide secure, efficient, and accessible services. I will not repeat this, I've indicated it. But also to establish and maintain secure, efficient, and accurate, as well as very integrated data systems. we are emphasizing this issue of integrated here, because as we are aware, for example, we've always had a problem where if people enter in a particular port of entry, they will then take a chance and go to another port of entry to exit, and the other port of entry where there was where the entry took place will never be able to know on the system whether the person has left the country or not. But also you will have a situation where if someone is applying for asylum, will move from one center to another without the other centers being able to pick that up, and people will change their names, will change their surnames, and we don't realize that in fact we're dealing with the same person. We end up having wrong information and system that is clogged up, and also find that it's clogged up by the same people. So our systems have to talk to each other, they must shake hands, and they must be able to inform each and every, we must have a shared database for similar purposes. To facilitate and regulate the movement of people into and out of the Republic of South Africa through ports of entry, in the interest of national security, as well as in terms of the in support of the development goals. And this is in line, I think, with also NEPAD, where we talk about reversing the brain drain to a brain gain. And that is what the department must be able to support and bring appropriate skills that are scarce in the country as part of the developmental goals of South Africa. To determine the status of asylum seekers and regulate refugee affairs, but also to advance cooperation with other departments and relevant civil society to transform the Department of Home Affairs into a center of excellence for securing and affirming the identity and status of citizens. These are the goals that we have set ourselves in our strategy, and we believe that we will.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Maybe there's a misunderstanding. From what I understood from the notice, the agenda that we received, we were going to have a briefing by the department on the progress made on the turnaround project that, as far as I know, started in 2007. I thought we were going to discuss specific issues on how the vacancies filled, you know, specific stats and figures. So I don't understand why we're now discussing the strategic framework and the strategic goals. So, maybe you can just draw on that, but I would really like us to get to the heart of the matter, because there are several issues that need to be addressed with regards to transformation.
Thank you, sir. I would like to agree with the member. I really must say I am a little bit puzzled that we are sort of repeating what we did in the last committee meeting we had. And I quickly went through what the department is now presenting to us. And I thought really what we were interested in was what have we so far achieved. And I only saw one page that was indicating only four things that have been achieved. And even those four issues were not properly indicated. So I think that's the problem that I also have. We've already done this, and we thought we would get to that.
If I can make a proposal, I would just like to make a further proposal to you. If maybe the committee members can have an opportunity to ask pertinent questions about the transformation that they would like to have answers, because it doesn't seem, if I look at the document, that those questions are in here, or the answers are in here. And then maybe we can take a 15-minute break or something, and the department can look at the questions and answers, because we are now really wasting the committee's time.
I hear what the members are saying, and I wanted to propose, maybe to put it to the DDG and his delegation as to whether is there anywhere where maybe they have information with regard to what the members are asking for?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. We do have areas that one of our honorable members has indicated, why we are indicating clearly the issues of what has been achieved. The document was developed in consultation with the portfolio committee secretariat around what is expected of us. If we are addressing something that was not expected, we would like to apologize if there was just then a misunderstanding around the issue of what is expected of us today. But definitely we do have things we can report to about significant progress made around that. Around transformation of the planet.
Getting it from the secretary here, the secretary is actually confirming what the honourable members are asking for. And let me give it to Mum Becker.
No, just thank you, Chairperson. I was going to suggest that the proposal that let's adjourn for 5-10 minutes. And get the department to sort them out. To be honest, the chairperson, I just kept quiet because now this is the first time I come to committee. That's why you see there's no reaction, no writing, no noting, because what you are telling us, we have heard this for the past 15 years. So we thought we were going to get something fresh and new, you know, about the progress that we can see there is progress in the Home Affairs now. Want you to tell us about what is happening. I propose that we break, give them time to sort themselves out, and then we can.
No, then the portfolio committee will attend for 15 minutes. We'll come back just around 10:30.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe can I just say before that, the initial part of my proposal was that we ask some of the questions that we thought were going to be discussed. So that maybe they can look at what they have and see whether they have those answers ready for us. Please say, because I've got several questions that I thought were going to be answered today.
But I'm not sure whether should we do that. I thought maybe if we adjourn and give them a chance to maybe sort themselves out, and then after that we'll come back, even if they cannot respond today, I'm sure there are days where they will come back and respond to whatever questions that they did not respond to today. Thank you. Will that be okay with you, ma'am? Okay, well, we're adjourning for 15 minutes. I mean, 15, coming back at 10:30.
We then, however, did was to then go to the passports that might be older, and we said we wanted to do what we call data cleanup. Data cleanup refers to what we regard as if there is any passport that was referred back for either recapture or there was something wrong with that photo, to say that those offices we identified, we went to the system. We identified the office, what was referred back to an office, to say those offices must recapture that. We established that particular instrument to assist us in dealing with those particular passports that might not have been recaptured. And we instituted that process exactly aimed at making sure that we clean everything. And what we came up with was that there were plus minus 20,000 passports that needed to be really captured. Recaptured on the system, or it's old information but was not cleared on the system. And we then identified those who might have applied between January, in particular, to April, for those people who, the people who definitely had a problem of waiting for an ID, because they wanted to go for an apply for a passport. So we instituted that process of data cleanup. That process is still ongoing, but in terms of the really clearing that backlog as I was identified of our 60,000, we're able to do that. And the 300% improvement, this refers to what was happening at the head office with the staff. The staff was having what we call targets, and you'll find that the targets per individual that you sign for, which is called the in your job description, and then if we have to assess you under the performance management and development system, you will find that then through that PMDS, people will say, I can only do 250 applications per day. Now, when applications come and there are more than, there are a lot of them, you find that people say, oh, but I've reached my target of 250. But because processes were not really streamlined, and you couldn't tell whether exactly that's the capacity of a person per day, we needed to then, we looked and did what we call a clear process audit, and then embarked on what we call operations management, in which then each person will be given work and we monitor performance and productivity of a person. And indeed, through that process and the meetings that I referred to of our morning meeting with the staff and the dashboard that we put there to say we will capture your, how much you capture today, how much you capture tomorrow compared to your colleagues. That assisted us a lot. There were people who were doing 300 applications a day for verification, whatever, suddenly were able to reach even 1,000 applications. And we then able to change even the norm after that we changed from the PMDS. And the staff agreed because they understood it was in their interest, but also in the interest of the country. And those norms were changed with the staff on productivity itself. So that is my reference. But in relation to the Nyanga issue and the new offices, Mr. McKay will respond to that, the DDG for immigration services. Is track and trace system working? It is working quite tremendously. We are even able to, currently as we move even to the new product, we are now able to even check how long has the application been stuck in a particular stage. We are able to get the report from track and trace per office. And that is another indicator to say we can even be able to provide those reports as and when members are able to allow. We are able to monitor when was the application first got in and are the offices submitting those applications on time to head office, because we introduced what we call a courier system, a single courier system that assists us then to capture applications. As they deliver IDs, they bring back applications. So we needed to improve on those. And yes, second place is working. And the issue of the legislation for asylum seekers, and I will leave also that to Mr. McKay. And there's a lot of asylum seekers here by honorable men. I think Mr. McKay will deal with those. The issue of the new value and the staff changing in terms of their conduct. Firstly, we move from the premise that there are committed staff, dedicated staff in an office, as in any other organization, but there are still also people within that environment who give the department a very, very bad name. But it's not all the staff of an office. Now, how do you change behavior? Is a question that is quite difficult, because behavior does not change overnight. But you need to make sure that you put processes and systems that improve accountability, as well as it improves the responsibility on the part of people, and you are also able to have those values indicated and demonstrated in terms of conduct. Now, that process does include the issues of training on battlefield, but also in terms of us ensuring that there is compliance with the system. there is a consequence for not submitting and complying with the standard that has been set. Now, changing people's mindset about customer care, we still admit it's a very, very difficult culture change issue that needs all of us to be supported. And I think that is why at this stage, over and above the change management program that we have, when we engage with the staff, they are taking through the values that we believe in, the top 200 sessions that we have with them, sharing all this new vision and everything else, it became necessary to establish processes and systems that we expect people to comply with. Now, this remains a challenge, honorable members. And is it yielding results immediately? I think looking at the challenges we have, I wouldn't say it is true. We still have a challenge on this issue. And I would be misleading the House if I were to say there are immediate results around the attitude. So there are still people who complain bitterly on how they are being treated, being wrote. But with the system the minister has established about reporting complaints and compliments, I think that is beginning to really, people are showing a sense of agency, and most people seem to do so around understanding the value of treating people with dignity. But this is where we believe that the honorable members, in playing their oversight role in supporting the department, can be able to also bring to our attention and be able to alert us. And the minister has been very clear here that if your person, you can identify if the horse is not wearing a name tag, we will hold the head of office accountable. If we enforce those measures, I believe that the behavior will change. But that the public must assist us also on these matters where someone is rude. The tendency is that we shy away towards South Africans. I think generally from my, this is a personal perspective, we accept quite easily short treatment. And we then shy away. If it's a restaurant, the waiter is, the waitress is not right, we move away and go to. But in home affairs, you can't go anywhere else to get services of home affairs. So it becomes necessary that the public assist us in dealing with such kind of conduct and allow us to deal then with those behaviors. But yes, there are processes, there are systems that we are putting in place, and that will help us to deal with it. And on the issue of the link between the Department of Health and Home Affairs, we have a number of hospitals where we are already present as a department with the Department of Health. The last engagement was really looking at how best we can improve that relationship and be able to increase the number of hospitals so that eventually it becomes a nationwide rather than selected number of hospitals. So we are finalizing what we call the MOU, which then articulates what would be the role of a nurse or whoever is a clerk in a hospital to assist us in registering this bed. And so that there is a role clarification around that, what kind of forms can be implemented. But what happens is that we deploy our system in hospitals. We then have what we call connectivity to NPR, the National Population Register, and then we'll have officials who are there, and then they will be able to register beds and deaths. It's not just beds, but it's also and deaths in those hospitals. As long as there is connectivity and we are present there. The intention of the department is to be to have a presence, capacity allowing, systems allowing, throughout the country. And so that then this becomes a culture to register beds. Document authentication is a process of verifying the problem until people come forward before we can capture this. More often than not, most of the documents that we're able to really identify to be fraudulent is documents where people have really come forward. It is very difficult under the circumstances to proactively identify which document was issued fraudulently. But what has happened is that there will be a situation where when we were moving from fingerprint or manual fingerprint verification to automated fingerprint identification system, there were clear indications where we were able to identify possibly people who might have illegally acquired our documents, and we called that case file, and we captured it on the HANI system to make sure that those people, when they come forth, were able to then say, can you submit a fingerprint, and then we're able to determine whether you were really authenticated and a right South African citizen to acquire that particular document. So in the past, all the department was using face value and manual and fingerprint classification. There were errors that were made, but there were people who you might find that applied fraudulently, and those things were processed. And that's why the issue of the cleaning up of NPR becomes very critical. And we believe that through the process of the smart card, it will be one of the best opportunities. So then people can come forward and be rejected, and can tell whether during that process this person is really a South African or not. That is one of our best hopes to be able to deal with that. Thank you very much.
Mr. McKinney.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Honourable members, please allow me to respond to the issues of refugee and asylum seekers holistically in terms of the problems that we face, Chairperson, and our strategy to resolve some of the issues with regard to that. Chairperson, there is a crisis within the refugee reception or the asylum-seeking refugee area. Just the sheer numbers that we are getting coming into South Africa applying for asylum. We have in that area an abuse of the asylum-seeker process, where we find that most of the people that apply for asylum and for refugee status are what we call economic migrants and do not qualify in the true sense of the word in terms of being refugees as per the international instruments. So we find that we have a rejection rate of about 90% presently of all asylum seekers in South Africa, purely because they are not a genuine refugees or asylum seekers. And that compromises our protection mandate that we have to protect refugees, because we find our systems clogged by people seeking for asylum that are not genuine asylum seekers. Chairperson, to deal with that, our strategy is to deal with it at different levels. One is at a strategy, at a policy level. We would need to have a look, and we are in the process now of approaching cabinet for an in-principle approval that we separate economic migrants from asylum seekers and refugees. That we do that separation, so that we have a regime to deal with economic migrants in the country, and they don't clog our refugees. And it will take away about 70 to 80% of people away from the asylum seeker process that we need to deal with. The other one, honourable members, is we might want to relook our policy in terms of how we deal with refugees and actually look at issues of having a transit facility to process asylum seekers, where people are kept with free movement but controlled movement whilst their claim for asylum is being looked at. Now, all of these issues are still in a discussion phase and will be brought to the portfolio committee once we've concretized some of these issues. We have set up an interdepartmental team to look at the issue of dealing with the policy issues with regard to refugees. Chairperson, the other issue or the other strategy is to increase our numbers of officers in all the provinces. In Gauteng, for instance, we have an office in Limpopo, in Musina, which we opened in 2008, and in fact we will be taking occupation of a new building in the next week or two in Limpopo. And that takes a huge strain of people moving from Musina into the rest of South Africa, because they are already they are being processed in Musina. We have in Johannesburg three centers. We have one at the Johannesburg, or what we call the Crown Mine Center. We have one at Marabastad, and the other one is at the Tshwane Event Center, which is a temporary site just to deal with SADC nation. By having this temporary site at the Tiro, it has taken about 60 to 70% of clients away from Marabastad and Crown Mines in Johannesburg, and those centers are now dealing with manageable amounts of people that are able to, and the staff is able to manage that. We have had at the Tiro site the business people complaining about the number of people that are similar kinds of complaints that we had around the center in Nyanga, as well as in Crown Mines, that our clients are sleeping on the pavement, they are urinating there, they are making fires in front of the shops and factories and stores. And to deal with the problem, we then had to move our operations from Tiro to Marabastad, and from Marabastad to Tiro, because we are dealing with less people at Marabastad. We now have less people at Tiro, and the profile of the client going to Tiro is different from the one at Marabastad is different from the profile of the one going to Tiro. The people coming to Tiro, for instance, come for a document, and after they have received the document, because they have nowhere to go to, they sleep around the office and stay around there. A community naturally develops from there. What we have done now, the profile of the client going to Marabastad, for instance, has changed. These are people coming for renewal, and they are, most of them do already have existing homes in South Africa, which they return to. So they come for a day service and then return. By doing that switch, we have eliminated the nuisance factor for those business people, and also the threat of them going to court to close down our Tiro center. So in Johannesburg, Chairperson, we have these three centers where we are managing the refugee and asylum process. Where we have overlooked, Chairperson, is Cape Town. Cape Town deals with about the same number of people that we find in Johannesburg or in Gauteng. And we just have one center with a capacity of half of that of Crown Mines, for instance. So we would need to drastically firstly look at we're dealing with large volumes, we need to look at a larger center. And we are in the process of relocating, as you know, our Nyanga office to another office in Fort Tracker Street in Maitland, where they are busy constructing one for us with the correct size and the correct layout, so we would be able to adequately, it is a office that will be designed according to our work processes, so that we are able to process asylum seekers faster or efficiently and effectively. And it is being constructed for us, or it will be constructed for us in the next 4 to 5 months. In the meantime, we have procured a temporary site just behind where we are going to build, where we will have a temporary site to move or relocate the office to that temporary premises at the end of this month, and we should. The service provider is hard at work trying to see that we are in time to move out to this new venue interim for 4 months before moving into the custom-built project plan around this, and it has been planned to precision, and we hope to be able to make the move into the new premises by the end of this month. So, Chairperson, what we have done in Cape Town as well, we have negotiated with the farmers in the Duin, where we have opened up a temporary facility to deal with asylum seekers that come from that area, and most of them are working on the farm, which takes a lot of pressure as well off Nyanga presently, because people now don't have to travel all the way from the Duin and those outlying areas and sleep over the night and be at risk of being mugged, robbed, and all other nefarious activities taking place against them at the fence. So the temporary office in the Duin is in operation and dealing with people from that particular area. I believe, Chairperson and honorable members, that we still need another center in Cape Town, just because of the numbers that we are dealing with. And once we have another center in Cape Town with adequate staff, it will take off the pressure that we are seeing now on Nyanga, and we will be able to deal with the numbers. Chairperson, we have an office in Durban. We have an office in PE. Those offices are also taking a strain because some asylum seekers travel from afar as Northern Cape and Free State to these offices for service. And we are in the process now of looking for an office in the Free State that will be opened within this financial year so that we will be able to take off pressure from those centers over there. And we are looking in the financial year 2010 to open up an office in the Northern Cape, and that should spread, I think, the people having to migrate and move to other provinces and clog and we have large queues at those centers. Chairperson, we are also in the process of recruiting from the National Youth Service people that would be able to assist us with queue management in our offices so that we don't have the big reliance on the security companies to do that, but that we actually have our own temporary staff dealing with queue management as well as with queries in those offices in terms of showing people where to go to, which queues to join for services. We are presently with our HR department recruiting National Youth Service members for this. Chairperson, we do experience a backlog in our appeals cases because the number of the appeals board, the refugee appeals board, currently consists of 4 members, and they are just not able. If we have a rejection rate of close to 90%, the numbers of cases that we are hearing is immense. It's huge. What we have done now is we were able to secure funds to advertise for a further, I think, five members to increase it to 9. It's still, I think, a drop in the ocean, and we are able to work on the backlog. Chairperson, the amended Refugee Act makes for provision for over 40 refugee appeals board members of the Refugee Appeals Authority, and that number would assist to eradicate that backlog substantially when the new act comes or when we implement the amended act. And this brings me to the question then of where are we with the implementation of the amended act. When the amended act returned back from the parliamentary process, we had picked up that there are some technical errors in the act. Technical errors in terms of a section 32.1A, for instance, reads similarly to a 31B, giving our Director General the responsibility to adjudicate on manifestly unfounded cases. And 32B, I might have just have the subsections wrong, etc. Or give that authority to the appeals, to the appeals authority, the refugee appeals authority. So there is a conflicting, there are two conflicting subsections which we believe are, in consultation with the state law advisors, were really technical errors that should not have been there. So to correct that, chairperson, we need to go through the parliamentary process again, and we need to bring it back to the this esteemed house to be looked at again, and for that amendment to go through. So we'll be amending an amended act, and once that is done, we would be able to implement immediately, because we've already worked on the or the regulations have already been compiled as well. And it should then be, once it has gone through the process of amendment again, be ready for, implementation. Chairperson, I think my response gives then our strategy with how to deal with the challenges that we have within refugee affairs and how we are going to move forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Some of the questions that were not responded to, if I remember well, the issue of the 700 vacant posts, that when that, and before you respond, and 1,000 contract workers, whether were they vetted or not, and those that were prosecuted. Over to you, ma'am.
Thanks, Chairperson, to the honourable members as well. May I just respond to the question that was asked in relation to the fact that whether the department is participating on the particular programs as they are prescribed by DPP, if I can respond to the vacancies. To say yes, indeed, as Ms. Mkhize has indicated, we do, as part of government, also participate in the particular revitalization program and the municipal induction program. And that has got a very strong component in terms of customer care. And on average, really, 80 to 90% of our staff members have gone through the compulsory municipal induction and the, particular revitalization program. Getting to the issue around vacancies, honourable member, I am of the view that you are maybe making reference to the 2008-2009 700 vacancies that were identified. And to say that out of that, between 590 to 610 of those posts were filled, and they were comprising of posts from the information and communications unit, from our immigration services, which touches on the immigration officers for both OAS Tambo and Cape Town International Airport. And during that time, we had also looked at beefing up our refugee centers, as Mr. McKay has indicated. So those 700 were mainly focusing on that, because we were just in the process of migrating members from the old establishment to the new establishment. So we had to identify those critical posts that we needed to deal with. However, this year we're going to have the same challenge. We have identified around 690 of the vacancies that must be filled. And they will be caught up by the same process of migrating people from the old to the new establishment. However, I guess members may have seen adverts in the newspapers where we have advertised for immigration services. We have also recently advertised for civic services to fill those vacancies. Our recruitment process, when it talks to screening, touches on two areas. We do the vetting, which looks at the broader integrity of a person, but we also look at the South African Police Services record. So for the contract workers, we do the sub-clearance. I think we appreciate the fact that the NIA process, it is a long-term process that could also not be considered within a particular period of time. So we're also able to pick up negative reports on the subclearance. So it also helps us to make sure that we don't recruit or we don't appoint incorrect members. The issue around prosecuting those who have done wrong ethically, we do have different levels of whether you give a final written warning or you do a dismissal. On average, 120 people so far have been dismissed, and I'm talking past financial year to date. This is just an average, Chairperson. If exact figures could be provided per province and what the people have done, that could be provided for. But on average, this is the number that we're giving. And then the last part that deals with how the department intends dealing with corruption. With the minister who has been vocal around the image of the department when it comes to corruption, we have recruited and appointed two specialists who will beef up our counter-corruption unit, but also to assist in terms of looking at the strategy of how do we deal with corruption, looking at the fact that whether the structure that we have helps us respond to the challenges that we have. So the two members have started from the 1st of September. We're hoping that a strategy would be developed and therefore we will begin to respond in a very proactive manner on issues of corruption. Thank you very much.
The second round. Another thing, time is against us, honorable members. The people who will be asking questions, could they be short to the point, please? Because time is very much against us. Over to you, Honorable Kwetane, followed by Honorable Terblanche.
Thank you, Chair. I thought I'm going to mention, since it's my first time, but I'm tempted when I look at the transformation achievements and the impact on service delivery. I need some clarity when I look at that because there are two sisters that went to Home Affairs in Khayelitsha yesterday. The other one is 18-year-old Nosibonga. I think they are from Jibeliso. She's going to write a standard saying she went to check her ID. And the second sister is Nopo Chamberlain, something like that. Ntombe Temba Chikelan. She's a 21-year-old. She's looking for the ID. She's been applying for the ID. She could not get it. And when they went there yesterday, they were told that the bunch of IDs that have arrived is the IDs that are dated back to October last year. So they have not received this year's IDs at Kailitar offices. So I don't know, how do you measure this report that is in front of us today? And also I would like to get more information on the smart card, because I'm waiting for the smart card. My ID is so old, ID book is so old that I stapled it because I thought I should rather apply for the smart card, because the smart card has been on the pipeline for a long time. So I would like to know the process. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. I appreciate the fact that Mr. McKay said that we will be get information on policy matters with regard to refugees. I wonder then why we had to read in the newspaper about the ID for refugees that's underway, and I would really like to have more information about that, because the Honourable Mzoleni, the spokesperson, said that the ID was underway for refugees and that its announcements will be made soon, but we as a portfolio committee don't know anything about that. And then secondly, I would just like to hear from the department, if you say you would like MPs to bring problems to you, in what manner do you want us to do that, and who should we contact? Because I'm experiencing problems lately to get to the right person to assist me with queries that people bring to me. And then with relation to security personnel, who is ultimately responsible and to who do they report in? Because I've personally witnessed how security personnel is basically running the younger centre and not Home Affairs officials. Now, they and the translator that's supposed to only translate actually handle people's documentation. And I don't think that is supposed to happen like that. I just want to also just add to that, that as a committee we've agreed that we will have a separate meeting on younger at some point in time, and so that the department can know that they must prepare themselves about what's happening there, because we would like to scrutinise that specific those specific problems. Thank you.
Over to you, or Mr. McKay. So before you respond, Honourable Lindlela.
I definitely will be short. It's just about the 2010 preparedness. Last time we did ask the department whether they are ready, and they did say they are ready. If maybe they could come and share with us how ready they are in terms of the 2010, that would really help us. The second one is the human trafficking legislation. I read in the paper that South Africa actually has no legislation as far as human trafficking. If that is right, and really here I think it's just for me to be empowered. If we have the human trafficking legislation, who is responsible? Is it the department or we don't know. So it has to be enlightened. The last one is just about the national population register and wanting to find out for how long then is still being cleaned, and when are we now going to say we have the right one.
I thought the sorry chair, and thanks for the opportunity again. I thought the speakers were going to, honorable members were going to address some of these questions. The reality is there's a lot that we would love to talk about, and the timing is rather challenging. But the Mr. McKay mentioned that there is a review on the policy on refugees, and there's a task team appointed by Parliament. It was the first, in fact, it's the first time I hear of this. And there's a task team that is appointed, so that's the point. And I would like to know how long will it take for them to complete this, and what are the focus areas in terms of that particular review. And the other issue, sir, is the fact that there's a new center, temporary center that has been identified to assist the younger refugee center, saying that they have to relocate. Where will this center be? And does the department have, can the department confirm that the center in Custom House, the Custom building, is there any confirmation that there won't be any challenges in terms of that site? And if there are, what are those challenges in Maitland? So if they can't answer all these questions, I will understand, you know. But I think those are key questions that we need to raise, among others.
Over to Mr. McKay and the PPP.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I'll deal with the last issue, if I may, Chairperson. It's not Parliament's honourable member that has appointed the task team. It's an interdepartmental task team that we as the department has asked for, because migration is not an issue that we can deal with as a department alone. It is all other departments need to assist and deal with it, because it's interrelated issues. So there's an interdepartmental task team that's looking at the whole issue of migration and how to deal with the mixed flow. Mixed migratory flow coming into South Africa. And their focus area will be to look at legislation or to look at policy options for unskilled and semi-skilled labor coming into South Africa, which is a reality, where these categories of workers do not qualify for work permits as other, or they do not all the requirements as per the Immigration Act for work permits. So we need to see whether we can deal or have a regime, a policy regime that will deal with that immigrant or that economic migrant, for instance. So that is the focus area that they will look at. With regard to the human trafficking legislation, yes, we believe that it is going to go through the parliamentary process in this year, and it is driven by the Department of Justice. We do play a big role in it. It is also there's also an interdepartmental team that looks at it, and we form part of that interdepartmental team, but it is driven by the Department of Justice and will be taken through the parliamentary process by them, honourable member. With regard to our 2010 preparedness, chairperson, we would be delighted to come and brief you on the 2010, because that is a briefing in itself. We have already had a trial run now during the Confederations Cup with the concept that we had, which was successful, we believe, in terms of immigration processes that we had introduced. And we were able to, although it was at a very smaller scale than what the 2010 World Cup would be, but it gave us the opportunity to test the concept and how they would be working. And we hope that we, and not hope, we are on track in terms of delivering that. Our major challenge is in the area of technology, and our technology partner at this time, and that is where we are. We are and we are hard at work in getting the technologies ready to be able to assist us during 2010. But chairperson, we would be able to come to the portfolio committee to give a briefing on where we are with the 2010. The refugee ID, honourable member. The new or the amended Refugees Act makes provision for the issuance of a green barcoded ID document for refugees. To assist in alleviating xenophobic tendencies, so that everyone carries a document that all South Africans carry, but in it, it is clear that this is for a refugee, that it is a refugee ID, but a 13-digit number, but it is clear that this is a refugee ID document. Now, in preparation for that and the implementation of the amended Act, we have gone ahead in piloting it and in getting our systems ready to be able to print these documents. So it is at a pilot phase where we are at present. And once the amended Act has been, or we have gone through the amendment again of the Act, we will then be issuing these documents. But our minister had made this announcement, our deputy minister has made the announcement, because we have already looked at a pilot and whether we can do it within our processes, within civics, and that can be done. So as soon as we implement the Act, we will be able to issue these documents to refugees. Chairperson, with regard to security personnel at Refugee Affairs, they are accountable to the management of the office. Really, what we see at Nyanga happening is really a weakness of management. It should not be happening. It's just total weakness of management to take control of that particular area. And that is why our need to bring in National Youth Service people to do the queue management for us and the queries on the floor itself. And we hope that will be dealing with. We are also talking to the, I'm in the process of talk, and we have in the past spoken to the service provider in terms of their members overstepping the line. And where that has been found, we have asked that such members be replaced at our offices. The the issue of the interpreters. We do have a problem presently where we do not have the interpreters that we are going to go out on tender to get a service provider to do interpreting for us at our refugee centers. Presently, it's an ad hoc arrangement where we get people in to come and assist us with that, and where we don't speak the language. For instance, you would find cases where the interpreter actually then also does the filling in of the forms for some of these applicants, which legally speaking should not be happening, because it is they should listen to what they are saying and then transcribe that onto the document for them, or the refugee reception officer or the refugee determination officer should actually be doing, listening to him doing that transcription on the document form. And we will look into that issue and see that it does not happen. And we are appreciative of the fact that you all are looking at Nyanga and what is happening there. And we would really, Honorable Chairperson, we welcome the idea to listen from you what are the issues that you are concerned with at Nyanga, so that we are able to deal with those issues adequately. Thank you, Chair.
On the issue of the Kaili Shan, the two sisters, we would appreciate really the details of the law before that. It would be quite shocking to have that situation where I think that not. We're tracking, as I've indicated, honorable members, all the applications. So if there is a particular IT that has not been delivered for whatever reason, we will definitely follow this up and until we get to where we're at. With our systems are quite transparent, we are able to follow through and be able to determine it. As I indicated, our major challenge and backlog really is in dealing with the issue of late registration of births. The reason for that being quite clearly the challenges around fraudulent attempts to acquire South African citizenship, which even as recently as last week, someone had tried to say he has not received an ID, doesn't understand why, South Africa is not given an ID. And when the investigation was done, this person had applied at Telstra office. And when she went there, in 2007, we discovered that through the interview, she had come to introduce an illegal a foreigner in the country without permission, and was pretending to be herself a South African. So when investigation was being done, we then discovered at that time in 2007, October, that herself was in fact becoming an informant when she had acquired an IT fraudulent. And therefore the IT was confiscated and she was deported. Now, there are people who are going to continue to take chances in order to acquire South African citizenship. So when this person went to the union building and we were called to say, hey, this person is really up and out, we then investigate and discover, in fact, he's an Lesotho citizen. Hasn't been belong here. And we ask her, how did you end up in South Africa yourself? And then she indicates, no, you know, Zama thing. Now, these are problems we have, and that is why LRC seems to be taking time in terms of really investigating, are you who you say you are? Is the informant really honest and a person of integrity that we can take your word? Are the supporting documents, the documents that are really from an authentic source in terms of whether it's a hospital, or it is a traditional leader, or is it a minister from the religious sector? Those are the applications where we really still have a challenge, but even there we're looking at how we can fast-track this. So sometimes then people sit and not do that. And that's why we've extended even track and trace on the late registration of that. So we will investigate that, Our effort is to really be efficient in all products, but we do have problems of corruption and fraudulent attempts, and then create a sense of a really don't care attitude also, even among our own staff, and that moral is not hadar, and they just take them for granted. And that is what we're trying to do when we talk of changing behavior. But we need that support from the committee members, honorable members, but also just from South Africa as a society in general, to report any efficiency, whatever it happens, we will deal with it. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Makiko. Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't answer one issue on the new premises for the Nyanga offices and the challenges that we see over there, and what are these challenges. Where we are moving to, the esteemed House will appreciate that we had to move in a rather short space of time. And what we have tried to do in this short space of time was to get a site and be able to sign a lease and get a plan to move in there. What we are trying to do is what we are doing is we are building a site, a custom-made site, that's based on our processes so that we would obviate the kind of problems that we are having at Nyanga, or had at Nyanga, for instance. We would have people, the site is such that everyone can get a big enough site where everyone can get onto the site and be under a roof when it rains, and so people don't have to be at the mercy of the elements. And they would be able to be dealt with on that site in terms of our processes. So the new site is big enough, we believe, to hold the volumes of people that come to the site. What we are also doing, and what we have learned in the setting up of our Tiro Center, for instance, is to consult with the business people and the relevant people around the site, to tell them that we are opening up an office. Then this is the type of office we are opening up, and hear what their concerns are, and how we deal with those concerns, so that we have a forum where we can deal with any problems should they arise, and we are able to deal with it should these arise. So we have also involved civil society in the issue. The Cape Town municipality has been involved in the issue, and most of the stakeholders have been consulted on the issue. And we hope that through that consultation, we will be able to obviate some of the problems that we have had at Nyanga. But suffice to say, I think we still, like I said, we still need another office in Cape Town, just to spread the numbers that we have coming to one office, because we find that invariably around our offices, especially our refugee reception offices, communities start to form. People start to come there. There's the opportunity to make business. They sell stuff. Stalls come up. People hang around there because this is where foreigners meet people coming from their own country, and that becomes a meeting place for them. So we need to see how we manage that with the involvement of City Council, the Metro Police, and all the other relevant local authorities. Thank you very much. Yes.
I'm not sure. I didn't actually hear you saying this is where the site is going to be.
That is the problem, Sebastian, and I'm hoping that you will address that particular one. But the other issue is around the time frame of the policy review by the task team, which I'm interested to know how long will it take, and when will they get back to the portfolio committee.
Chairperson, sorry, my question was also not answered about who specifically can we contact with regards to problems from our constituency, and when people contact us.
from the very outset, they said that these offices are going to be located in Fort Tracker Road in Maitland. I think they said so earlier on.
With your indulgence. Yeah, the question, there are two offices here that we're talking about. The other office is a permanent location, which is in Fort Tracker Road in Maitland, as my understanding. Then there is a temporary location, that which the current office ought to be moving to come 30th of September. And what I've phrased is the question around the actual location of the temporary office. So if it is going to be in Maitland, if that's the answer, then I'm happy. Or if the office is going to be elsewhere, I need to know where it is.
Mr. McKay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, yes, I'm sorry if I was not clear, Honourable Member. I said we have the permanent offices in Fort Becker Street in Maitland, where they are busy constructing us a building. And behind it, we have secured another building for the temporary site. So it will also be in Fort Becker Street, Honourable Member, in Maitland. Thank you.
Question by Honourable Tavern with regard to people to be contacted at provinces.
Sorry, Chair, not provinces. I get a complaint from all over the country. I would just like to know an email address and a person that will be able to assist.
Yes. Thanks very much, Honourable Chair. Here in Parliament, on the 8th floor of the Department of Home Affairs, there is Mr. Kanile Mabul, who is a parliamentary liaison person, and we prefer to have that coordinated from that source, then it assists us to immediately, he links directly with my office, and in that way then I'm able to track those particular queries. So he's also able to give immediate feedback to members here.
I think we can get the number after the meeting. Vanilla is seated there at the back. It's the Minister Liaison Officer with the Portfolio Committee. And we have the Deputy Minister Liaison Officer also, Bayanda, for whatever queries that the members have. I'm sure those are the relevant people that you can communicate with. We are not going to take any more questions because of the time constraint. With regard to the video that we're supposed to watch, I think we will flag that for the next meeting. I suggest that we give the CFO the chance to make his presentation. I'm not sure whether that will be okay with you, Member. Can I maybe be directed by you? Over to you, CFO.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Member. I don't have a slide presentation, but just to give a little bit of a background, the department has made significant progress in financial management throughout the department. Presently, we are in the process of proofreading our annual financial report, and it will be tabled in this month as per the PFMA requirements. Given that, it's not yet a public document, but I'll address the issues that that we've gone through, we've succeeded in. There are several issues that I'd like to talk about. In the area of fleet management and transportation, in the year that's passed, the financial year that's passed, we've assigned more than 300 vehicle coordinators, fleet management coordinators. Specifically around, as this House knows, the department had a huge problem when it came to government carryout expenditure. And in this year, we've managed to resolve that issue. So we don't have issues around fleet management or government carryout expenditure. In areas of clearing of our suspense accounts, all material suspense accounts have been cleared in the past year. There is one account that has not been cleared, primarily because documentation dating back to 2004 has not been sought. Hence, without the documentation, special dispensation has to be received in order to move a transaction in the records of the department. And we're busy with the Accountant General's office with regard to that. In terms of our immigration accounts, the accounts have been separated out of the department's books. We've analyzed 11 years worth of financial information going back to, and out of those 11 years, we've provided sets of financial statements for 6 years, going back to the 2003-2004 financial year, ending in March 2009. Those 6 years are still being audited by the Auditor General, and an audit opinion is still to be expressed on that. We still do find that we have challenges around the areas of revenue management and asset management. On revenue management, it is the issue of completeness, because we do not have integrated offices, integrated systems in our front offices. All of them stand alone. The reporting is done in a standalone manner as well on BAS. And the reconciliations are also done in a fragmented manner. What we've done thus far is, in terms of, as we've discussed to this house previously, regarding our receipting solution, we are rolling those out. As of last week, we've got 14 sites live, 8 of which are in Gauteng, 6 of which are in KZN. We are in KZN this week, rolling out a further 4 to 6 sites. In the area of asset management, initially, the department didn't have asset registers and controls around assets. This year, we've got asset registers, the year that has passed. And just to put into context the department's asset numbers, we have got under management 150,000 odd pieces of equipment, assets. The value of that is in the region of 1.3 to 1.4 billion rand. The spread of that, 40,000 of those items make up 1.3 billion rand. 110,000 items come to the value of 80 million rand, but those 110 are items less than 5,000 rand. So it's small items, and this is where the department really has to put in very tight controls around what is called in accounting terms as minor assets. So on our significant assets, all of those have been accounted for because they do not move frequently. What we're finding is that when assets move, the paperwork around that is delayed, and that's where we're tightening up our controls in terms of the movement, because it goes to talk of the existence test around an asset, meaning that when we count an asset today and an auditor goes in 2 weeks or a month later and does not find that asset in that location, there's a question that this is a fictitious asset. The paperwork around that suggests or indicates where the asset has moved to, and that's where we tighten up our controls around assets. In the procurement environment, as you saw in the slides, the department is on manual systems. We are bringing up computerized systems. That is a training process, but by the end of this calendar year, we should be automated in terms of that. Our procurement systems. We've got contract management systems in place. We were on a spreadsheet system, but we've populated that into the automated system, which is the Procure system that National Treasury has approved. In terms of the tendering processes and the procurement processes for large items, as the House would know, there's a bid adjudication committee that's a delegated forum by the accountant officer, which is the DG. We have strengthened that forum in the sense that in terms of membership, there are 3 DDGs that sit on that committee, 2 chief directors and 2 directors. So the membership has been strengthened with high caliber individuals, senior management of the department. The process of sitting in the previous calendar year, we used to sit twice a month, just to bring into the department that discipline and the speed of submissions coming to the BAC. And all procurement purchases over 500,000 have to go through that committee in terms of procurement frameworks and the PFMA. In terms of the our lease registers and the completeness around our lease registers, this House would remember that we've had lease registers, but they were incomplete in that they only addressed one area of leases, leased items within the department. In the current year, we've bedded down that whole lease register, and we've got a comprehensive lease register on all assets, property, vehicles, IT equipment, and so that's not an issue with the department. In terms of cash and bank reconciliations, the committee would remember that in our previous years, these cash and bank reconciliations were not done, and the accounts were not cleared. We've managed to clear that as well in the year under review. And the reconciliations are done on a timely and a timeously and a consistent manner. Our analysis of reconciling items are also being done so that we know, even though we cannot clear an item in that day, we know what it is and when we can clear it from. So that is not an issue anymore. So in a nutshell, from a financial perspective, we are on a much better footing this year. And as I said earlier, when the annual report is tabled in this month, then we will present fully to the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
And thank you, CFO. I'm not sure if there are questions from the House. No questions.
Thanks, Chair. I think we will wait for the annual report to be tabled.
On that note, I think we would like to thank the department for their presentation and for the fact that the Portfolio Committee will be getting the annual report by the end of the month. Or
Chairperson, in terms of process, the legal requirement is to table the report, the glossies, by the 30th of September, after which the Portfolio Committee will put it on the agenda and request the department to come. So somewhere in the month of October, that would be done.
Okay. That will be in October, and we appreciate that because we were getting our report very late. So if it's going to be sometime in October, at least we are happy with that we can look at it. And with regard to the issue that was raised by Honourable Mastizole regarding the Who Am I Online, I think that issue will ask the chairperson maybe to invite the minister to come and brief the committee when we come back, because I'm sure Parliament will be going on recess or constituency after from the 25th of September, if I'm not mistaken, according to the draft program. So maybe when we come back from recess, then the chairperson will invite the minister to come and focus on the Who Am I Online issue. On that note, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.